Hello, humans. You're here for the weekly Vine Down, the show where we talk about all of the topics that are plaguing and lifting up enrollment and admissions in this day and age. I'm Emily Smith. If you don't know me, I've worked with hundreds of colleges on everything from CRM to today's topic, student search. And if you don't know about College Vine, we are like LinkedIn for high school students. I, in fact, know you know what LinkedIn is because you're watching us here on LinkedIn. And we are a professional network where students publish these beautiful profiles and they're there in order to get recruited by colleges. Colleges send connection requests to students or vice versa. And only when both people agree to being in relationship is a connection formed as a super high signal inquiry. And we have 2.2 million students on our network, hundreds of colleges recruiting here. We are really interested in today's topic. We are joined by John Laverty of the University of Iowa, an OG in the enrollment space. And today's episode, John is joining us to chat about operationalizing student search, doing that big effort and those big projects in-house, and doing it in a way that's really well-informed by data, the right information from your institution and about your institution, so that decisions about target markets, about what geos to unlock, what sources to buy, what to do and when, feel less mysterious than they might presently today. So John, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Emily, glad to be here.
That is great. John, we always open in the same way on the Vine Down when we have a guest as illustrious as yourself, because we assume that you have some lessons to teach our audience. What are some key lessons that you've learned over the course of your career?
Yeah, so I have done this for quite a while, over 30 years. And you know, I think you only know what you know, and you have no idea what you don't know. So the biggest thing for me is just don't be afraid to make mistakes and admit that you made a mistake and just sort of move on. I've had, you know, the opportunity to work with some great teachers and mentors throughout the years. Mike Hovland, who was with ACT, was with us. Dr. Brent Gage is our associate vice president. He's amazing. Dr. Kate Ralston, doing our data analytics here. It's a great team. And for me, you know, just thinking about being a lifelong learner, not being afraid to ask questions and just keep sort of pushing those boundaries. Mm. Those are sort of a couple of the key things, I think.
That's great. Kate Ralston, former Vine Down guest alum. You're our second Hawkeye on the show as of recent.
Yeah, there's some good stuff going on here.
For sure.
I think maybe like the third thing in all of this, and I started out working in it as an admissions counselor at Cornell College back under Peter Bryant and the whole Noel Levitz crew and Larry Ehrenberger, who has done a lot of great things.
Yeah, Larry. Hey, Larry.
Yeah, Larry. Sort of balancing out the idea that we've got all this data and there's certainly a science to it, but there's also this art. And like what you do impacts students and their families and people. And you have to understand the context of the data. And again, all of that sort of the art of all of this, you know, somebody once said we're trying to land, you know, this space shuttle on a little postage stamp at the end of the day. And well, that postage stamp is people, and all of that stuff goes into affecting people. So balancing the art and the science of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowing that it's like human work to better individual people, students, families, and communities, I think is really important. One of the key things you said at the beginning, which was don't be afraid to make mistakes. For folks in the audience who are young in your career, I know that making mistakes can feel really scary, but here you have a senior leader saying, like, he's the first one to say, like, hey, screwed it up. Calling that out, I think for the leaders out there, like, reminder, it's really powerful when you as a leader on your team show that you've made a mistake. It's actually really helpful for your team. It creates a lot of psychological safety, and a culture of like efficiency and safety is the way we get good work done. Thank you for sharing these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like you mentioned for younger staff, I mean, it's imperative for us as more senior staff to bring those younger staff in that have those leadership abilities that we see potential in and bring them along. And a lot of times the younger staff are starting out at entry-level positions and they always don't see that sort of higher level behind the scenes work that we're doing. And so get them involved, have them understand the data that we're using and, you know, why we're making decisions that we're making that affect what they're doing on the ground.
Yeah, that's actually like a key reason of why we do this show is to expose some of that. And I'm glad that that's a culture that you're bringing forward in your own admissions group. That's awesome. So today, folks, this is a live show. Reminder, we're like live here on LinkedIn Live. So you are welcome to ask us questions, comment, heckle John a mild amount. If there's too much heckling, we can probably kick you out. I don't know how to do that. We'll figure it out. So just a hot reminder to the audience, like you can ask us stuff. And this is a particularly exciting show and a topic for me because I spent a long time in the student search world across a couple of different companies and learned the motion when it was really different than it was today. Like when I first started doing student search, it was called direct mail. And it was like the very early 2000s. And in that time we had like 2 to 4 name releases a year. We had like 4 sources, maybe 3, depending on how you count them. The average student name was being sold about 40 times to today's 150, 200 times. And things have changed a lot. And obviously at College Vine, as we're trying to really change the sort of explicit nature of students opting into relationship and voluntarily entering the funnel, I'm really excited, John, to talk with you because you have spent so much time in your career analyzing data and behaviors and what works and what doesn't around student search. You have this great experience of doing this in-house at a really large scale. And John, I'm curious if you can talk a little more about like that mindset around the art and science of enrollment and how that drives your behaviors around your student search work at Iowa.
Yeah, sure. I mean, for us, we're a large Big Ten Research One institution serving the state of Iowa. So primary market in Iowa, we understand that pretty well. We also understand like our secondary markets in contiguous states, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, et cetera. So we have that down pretty well, but you know, it's a big world beyond that. And totally. That's where it can get really expensive. It can, you know, there's so much data. There's literally millions of students out there out beyond those boundaries. So that's the part I think that the data really has helped inform what we do. And for us, when Mike Hovland came on board, he had been with ACT for years and kind of a search guru. Mm-hmm. Ashley and Dr. Gage came in. Like we really need to start getting this data and collecting it and use some of that data to make decisions. Mm. And so collecting the data, just getting good data and storing it was like step number one. And so we started doing that. Then we realized we need to analyze the data. Well, we didn't have a data analytics unit built out at the time. We didn't have the Kate Ralston that we have now on our staff that can help analyze and visualize that data. But we have this great College of Public Health that was doing biostatistics and they're famous for their research. And Mike Hovland worked with them and said, can you help us understand the data that we have and what components of the data that we get through student search, through application data, et cetera, is most important, and start building out some predictive models that can help in some of the other work that we do. So the cool thing about Iowa is we have one central student database that's in-house. Mm-hmm. All the data from the time we get a name in through a search purchase or a student just jumps on and fills out an online form, all of that data through application and enrollment is all together. So we see it all. It's not in a third party in search and stuff. It's all here within house. So through all the different vended sources that we use, you know, we just try and maximize that data. So College Board has segment analysis service. We can utilize that. Incura has some opportunity models that they're doing. There's models like that. There's just a lot of different data. And again, if you're not loading that data and figuring out how to use it, you're really at a disadvantage. And I think that's one of the key things about being able to do search in-house.
Yeah, is to not be completely quagmired by and drawn in by like just the amount of data and where it goes and where you can access it cleanly. And this is something that I've witnessed so frequently with colleges that they're just operationally not healthy enough to be able to deal with the volume, not only the volume of records, but also the complexity of records. Because in this day and age, as you're saying, there are like far more sources, there are far more student provided fields and pieces of data to see, but also now the vendors have, like everyone has a machine learning model, everyone has a predictive model running on top of the student sources, which is starting to inform you, like, here's how to treat this student, here's how to think about this student, whether it's persona and preferences from somebody like College Vine or Carnegie Dartlett or anybody else who's doing persona and modeling on Quora Mindsets. And like, I'm curious from your perspective, how to get from that, like operational maturity wise, how to get to that place of like, we take in none of the data, to take in some of the data, to take in all of the data, and not get yourself so bogged down by it that it's like impossible to move around in it because it's just too much. Do you have any perspective on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's, first of all, it's baby steps. So you can't do it all at once.
Yep.
I think Dr. Gage, when he came on board, it was about eight years ago, you know, created the position I'm in. So my position is focused on search and prospect development. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of the liaison between our recruitment outreach staff, our data analytics team. So Dr. Kate Ralston and the folks that are actually analyzing that data, mm-hmm. As well as all the vended sources. So, you know, in relationships with all the vendors, it's sort of like managing an investment portfolio that you might have for retirement. You've got all these different inputs and, you know, you've got an investment advisor, but that advisor is using all kinds of resources. They've got people that are analyzing, you know, minute by minute, the stock market. And they've got somebody that's working on the real estate investment side, somebody that understands the bond market and what that's doing. And all these things, like just like with our search and our vended sources, it's changing all the time. I mean, when COVID hit, I mean, that impacted it. Test optional. Mm-hmm. Start thinking about, you know, personal PII, you know, and the laws that are coming out with that. I mean, all these things are, it's always changing and it will continue to change. And you have to have that data in there, start out small. But it does help to have somebody that really can help visualize that data. I know questions to ask, not afraid to ask questions, and to have somebody by my side that can help with that data and help me understand it. That's kind of the key component to this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And to have a partner who can help balance the art and sciences piece of things and also have the correct data visualization. I'm imagining the mindset of some of the audience members, because we have a whole range of schools here, right? Like we've got Big Ten schools, we've got really small liberal arts colleges, and we have some colleges who are like, I don't know if we're going to be open in 5 years, right? So like a whole range. And I'm imagining hearing you talk about the resources that you have and the partnerships that you have institutionally at Iowa. And I fully appreciate and understand that not every institution is resourced that way. And like, there is definitely like a sort of like salivating watching of a school who has all of these resources. One of the things that I want to go back to, though, is you talking about how at Iowa, you had a group in the School of Public Health who was used to analyzing and visualizing a lot of data. And I think that's like actually a key thing that anybody at any college can do. Like, we all have folks who are savvy with data, whether it's a School of Public Health or institutional research group, or even your client, your CS students, like your students in computer science or data science, if you have that type of program. What better of a student project to get a data visualization project for source performance or for funnel conversions or like whatever it might be? And that's something that any school could leverage without like having this, you know, you as a dedicated person who's this liaison sort of portfolio manager. Like, that's awesome, but that's not a reasonable thing for many colleges to have. And I just wanted to highlight that you leverage, like, even at a big school with lots of resources and a data team, to leverage the humans on campus who are really good at data is like an amazing tip.
Yeah. And you mentioned the students. I mean,
yeah, Kate's got some amazing.
Mike Hovland, back in the day when he was here, and we continue it, we select 3, 4, or 5 undergraduate students, usually when they're sophomores. And these are students like in our actuarial science program, mm-hmm. or statistics, high level statistics. And we give them real life enrollment management projects. And they start out learning some basic skills. But pretty soon they're doing some real modeling and things that go all the way up into the president's cabinet and help, make decisions that are really important to the institution. And we're hoping we build a pipeline of folks that will someday in their careers come back and help enrollment management folks in some other way. They also help us think about things in different ways that some of us have. We've done this for years. They ask us questions. Why do you do that? What's this? And what does this all mean? And we start to think about the data and the interpretation of it in just in a different way.
Yeah, right on. What a good use of students. And I'll sort of like relay something and invoke Dr. Brent Gage, who is the VP at Iowa, your boss. And I was talking to Brent last week, actually, and we were talking about student search and source performance. And we were talking about the conversion rates and efficacy across different sources. And he had such a relaxed posture. Like we were talking and he was sort of like, yeah, you know, like it's really easy for me to see. I've got this report that is like source by source, who's converting, who's working. And I think that starts to answer that question of like, how do we know it's working and what should we go and do? And the decisions that you make because you have that data visualized about which sources perform well and which sources perform not so well, really start to inform like, yeah, we need more of this source, less of this source. We need, you know, like you and I were talking about this a little bit in the pre-show to have a different perspective of like, it's going to be a lot cheaper for us to recruit a student in state versus like, if we're going to go fight for a student in California. And that's maybe some of the art aspect of like knowing that, like what it's going to cost in, you know, effort and dollars to go recruit students outside of your primary market.
Absolutely. And those are, you know, some of the higher level strategy discussions that Dr. Gage and others have at his level with the institution about what do we have for budget and understanding, you know, balancing the ROI on, okay, we want more students from these out of state markets, but in the long run, the net tuition revenue may be a lot greater because we spent that little bit of extra upfront.
That's right. And to be able to see that all the way through, I think is really key. So to go back to this piece around like you as the, you know, I'm thinking about you as the portfolio manager and you as a person who educates the recruiters, the data folks and sort of this liaison to different groups with like sort of the student search bent. And I'm curious how you find yourself communicating and educating on search outcome data to help your broader teams be really effective. Like, how would you do that for a territory manager, for example?
Yeah, so I mean, one example, we have a regional staff member who lives in the Dallas, Texas area. She's awesome. And when she started, you know, this was all kind of a new thing for her. And we had been doing it for a while and just had a couple hours together over Zoom and started talking about, here's the kind of data that we have. Here's the type of search parameters that we've been using for Texas. Here's the kind of results through the funnel all the way to enrollment in the last few years, never just one year, but the last few years.
Sure.
And we started looking at that. And this is key too. This is the art part of it. We saw the data. And then we started honing in on certain areas. There was one particular territory in Texas. And it was like, yeah, we're getting a lot of action out of that. And, you know, it's really great. And we really haven't visited that area as much. Maybe we should visit there more.
Action being like lead and prospect suspect action.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So our regional rep, I should go visit. Well, we started digging into the data just a little bit further down and realized over the last number of years, yeah, the application and admissions numbers looked really good, but the background of the students, high poverty, lots of first generation, it was going to take a lot of money to get them here. And it was very far for travel away from home. Mm-hmm. These students tended not to do once they got here. If they did enroll, they didn't do as well. And some of that may have been, you know, they had some loan money in there and academically just being away from home.
Sure.
So like, do we want to spend a whole bunch of time, even though we're getting applications, do we want to spend a whole bunch more time in that particular area? And, you know, we all had a chat about it and decided, no, let's pull back on that. And let's again, go into the data and see where some more potential is. The other art of this is that person on the ground knew that there were some other kind of emerging neighborhoods that weren't quite what we might see in the data from 3 years ago, but they knew from just talking to the school counselors and families and what they saw in the news locally, we need to be starting to get into this other area. Well, I would never have purchased search names from that area, except mm-hmm. that regional rep said, I think we need to start trying that.
Yeah, that's cool how like data sort of drives those behaviors. That's something we talk about on the show a lot. I'm curious, John, if you'll talk a little bit about, like, I think some folks in the audience are here because they're hoping you're going to tell them what it feels like to run student search in-house. And I think about it in sort of three phases. I think about sort of campaign conception, planning and execution, and then sort of measuring results as the fourth thing. And I'm curious if you've been now doing this for a long time, it feels like a very normal piece of work for some institutions sort of were thinking about, like, should we pull out of doing fully managed student search with like an agency of which there are some very big players, some boutique players. And I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about sort of the conception, planning, execution, and measuring, and some of the things that may feel surprising to a school who might be starting that journey in doing it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So traditional search at this point isn't gone. So the name buys from the College Board and ACT and Cura is still critical. Mm-hmm. Although it's diminished to some extent right now, I think I can attribute half of our applicants in our pool right now for 2024 first source came from a traditional search name purchase. So that's still a huge part of what we have to do. And those parameters, I mean, looking at, you know, what's important, you're in your own backyard within a couple hundred miles, who's coming to your campus, what types of parameters on GPA and what types of students do you look to have coming to your campus? All those kinds of factors built into this. But then again, we're looking at growing beyond. I mean, we want more sorts of students from different areas of the country or different types of students or whatever it is. Those have to be built into this modeling as well. And then I will just say the vendors that we work with, the handful of vendors, they all have great expertise and most of them have some background in what we're doing.
That's right.
And again, just not being afraid to ask questions and also being willing to push back once in a while. I mean, obviously, there's a sales component to this. You know what your budget is. Like we've got to fit this. It's a big puzzle. We got to fit this all together.
That's right.
If I know that half of my names are coming from traditional search sources right now, I can't go and spend three quarters of my budget on something else. I've got to keep right now that in the mix. And again, that's just sort of that moment by moment balance of what we're doing. So we do have a dashboard, as I think you said, Dr. Gage showed you. And that was one of the first things we created. We said, we track all the sourcing of these names. Let's visualize that in a real simple chart that I can sort that says, this is first source. They were already in our system. It's overlapping. They ended up applying. How many of them applied from that source as first source or other source to application to eventually to enroll, but really to application. And I can sort those and I can go, this source is only generating at 4% first source to applicants, whereas this other source, oh my gosh, we're at 30% or whatever it is. Where am I going to spend my money if my resources are really limited?
Yeah.
It's going to be getting either at that 30% or it's the volume. I may have a bigger volume and a lower conversion, but if it's, you know, half of my pool, it's going to still be important.
Yeah. So I think setting yourself up to measure conversion rates is a really good first start in that sort of conception, planning, and execution. The other thing that I observe that I think institutions are surprised by when they take search in-house is the high stakes feeling of student search that feels related to the high stakes feeling of like admitting a student or not. Because it's like live campaigns, you're like segmenting, you're building messages, you're like actually putting things out into the world, whether they're like emails that you're putting out or printed pieces. And I do find that schools are often and frequently surprised by the sort of mundane, but very, very critical aspects of like testing messages, making sure that the right message in their system is tied up with the right audience in their CRM, that the right people are getting the right message at the right time. Doing that A/B testing or the max diff testing that we talked about on the show last week. And I think those are in addition to the sort of data and conversion rate aspects of what you are sharing. That's the other place that I watch institutions just be surprised that that is a big piece of work that if you're doing managed services with a search vendor, that they are taking that on for you. And they've got like a whole team of people who are testing messages and making sure that like the right messages are tied to the right audiences, tied to the right times, and so on.
So we have an in-house communications marketing team for enrollment management. We also have an institutional communications marketing group, and they work very nicely hand in hand. So again, I'm a liaison with them. So I'm not creating the messages, mm-hmm. but I do help them understand that, for instance, when we do search, the way that we do search, we're collecting information about students that may want grad or professional college right. later on. Mm-hmm. The messaging to them may be more geared towards research opportunities, things that will really help propel them into that graduate level program, and why Iowa has what it has to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Versus a student who says, you know, my real goal is maybe a 2-year degree or possibly a 4-year bachelor's degree. Again, being able to differentiate those messages. But you don't know that unless you collect the data, right?
That's right. That's right. Students are telling you what they want you to know. Yeah. Interestingly, source by source, it's also important to watch like the accuracy of student data, because students treat data sources differently, right? Like whether I'm throwing spaghetti at a web form because I'm trying to get at a scholarship, or I'm registering for a test, or I'm publishing a profile like we do on College Vine, or whatever the traditional methods of and non-traditional methods of data collection are. I also think about sort of accuracy and completion when I consider the student's mindset when they're taking the action that then they are giving us data that then we are taking action on later. And I think like when they give us the data, how they give us that data and the mindset that they are under, like, oh yeah, this is like, I'm registering for a test, so I'm going to give this type of data, or I'm, you know, I just want the $100 scholarship. You're going to get different quality of data there.
And the data, again, if am I still on?
Yep, you are.
Oh, okay. Somehow
it muted. For a second. So. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so with the data, you know, you can make other decisions. So we have a limited print budget, like probably most schools do.
Of course.
So
yeah.
Out of the hundred thousand, few hundred thousand, or whatever it is, names that you have in your prospecting database, how do you decide? Do you send, you know, a $3 piece to everybody, or is it just to a targeted group? And if you have the data and understand, you know, the process, the progression of those students through the funnel, you can make some really good informed decisions about who needs to get that communications versus who's just fine getting emails and one postcard or something.
Yeah, that's right. Let's talk a little bit about performance as we wrap up. This is, I think, the last question I'm going to ask you and probably the hardest question. Because over time, and I've been involved in student searchy things since the early 2000s, and over time, performance has dropped and dropped and dropped. Yeah. We have some published research that suggests, so like in 2018, RNL did a really awesome study about sort of efficacy of search. You buy 100,000 names, what happens? And in 2018, RNL published that you buy 100,000 names and you can expect to get 131 enrollments. We ran the same research again last year in 2023, and the 100,000 names now gets you 43 enrollments. So that's down 67% from 2018 to 2023. And I'm curious, like, and yet this is still a motion that we're really relying on. I'm curious about like how in this sort of declining performance of traditional search, like, how do you know that your search efforts are working? Like, what do you really like to see when it really comes down to it?
So like I said, I mean, traditional search is still feeding, it's half of our applicants right now.
Have your volumes gone up to maintain the half of our applicants or no?
Yeah, I mean, we're ahead of enrollment.
Sorry, the volumes of your purchase names, like have you had to buy more names to do that? Or yeah, has it been able to stay the same?
They've gone up. So here's the deal. Like our volume in Iowa and contiguous states is pretty mm-hmm. stable.
Got it.
We know that market. What's changed is that there's a focus on certain further away territories. So some on the East Coast, Texas, out on mm-hmm. the West Coast, whatever. So those we know are going to take a lot more effort.
Got it.
Means for us, it's going to mean more volume, but But we can still do that scientifically. We can still use data. So College Board, right. Segment Analysis Service.
That's right.
I mean, every one of the vendors has some sort of way to hone in. And we look at the data, our past history. What types of students, you know, might be interested in school like Iowa, or what majors? I mean, there's certain majors that are a big draw from California to the Midwest. I mean, we can look at like our creative writing program as an example.
Yeah.
And there's data in there, you know, how far away from home are students willing to travel, family incomes, and, you know, is a student with a 4.0 and a 36 ACT, can we meet scholarship comparisons to other schools? I mean, there's just all kinds of things in the mix on that when they come from that far away, but it will take more to get students from further away. So as you look at the demographic cliff, if it's in your key market background and you're going to have to expand to other parts of the country, it just is going to take more.
Yeah.
And you can only make up so much of that in my mind right now with some of the other sources. And that's why we've had to expand into other vended sources that are doing, you know, like College Vine does a great job in what you do, and Carnegie has other things, and mm-hmm. Niche does something, and EAB and CapEx has all kinds of other stuff going on. And you just have to figure out what that mix is. And again, you'll make mistakes, but you have to try. And then the next year you go, okay, well, that wasn't quite what we wanted, and have those hard conversations with those vendors.
Yeah. You're really underscoring though, that like this mindset that you are like the portfolio manager, and a good portfolio manager is measuring all the time. So to set yourself up, as you said, with whatever dashboard or data visualization you want to run, so that you can measure efficacy of sources. So with that mindset and sort of combating, like in average, we know we have to spend more, we have to do more volume here, but to do it smart, because like, if you're trying to unlock a new geography, for example, it's not going to be feasible for most schools to just like add all the volume, buy all the names. And the only way you can sort of become efficient in moving there is to evaluate sources, diversify sources, test and measure, and then be scientific about the aspects of like where you're going to be successful, because the answer can't be just more volume, right? Because we'll all be chasing our tails until the end of time on that one, and nobody has the resources to do so.
No, absolutely.
So John, I am really appreciative of you sharing all of that with me. As we close, we always do, I ask you what you're excited about in the next 6 months. I'm curious to know what the life of John Laverty is like in the 6 months ahead.
Crazy. So I have our youngest daughter's getting married in just a few weeks. So I'm excited about that. And
congrats, Dad.
Get together. So that's going to be fun. And I've got a new little granddaughter that's a few months old that will be coming as well. So I don't get to see her as often as I'd like. But we're also hosting in Iowa the Midwest ACAC with Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and the Dakotas in Dubuque, Iowa in May. And we're excited. College Vine will be part of that. So we're going to get to
meet. I love Midwest. It's the best conference.
Which will be great. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's awesome. We're really excited to go there. I haven't been to Dubuque in a long time. I hear there's a water park. I hear there's golf. I hear there's an awesome place to walk. So I'm very excited to see everyone at Midwest. John, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was fun.
Take care. Thanks. Yeah, you take care, audience. You be well. Enjoy spring. Enjoy spring break if you're on it. If you're about to go on it, have a great time. If you're not about to go on it, you'll catch the next vacation, I promise. Go get some fresh air, humans. We'll talk to you soon.